And hello, everybody. Welcome to WD Carousel of Podcast. My name's Crystal.
And I'm Ian.
And today we are going to do another Imagineering Spotlight.
Yes, or Imagineer. Indeed.
Not Imagineering. Yes.
Well, he did some Imagineering, but he's a guy.
He did quite a bit of stuff.
Yes, he did.
And honestly, I was really shocked that it took us 2+ years to even think about discussing him.
I know. Well, you know, we had a lot on our minds, I guess. I don't know.
No idea.
In fact, this is like the original of the Imagineers / Walt's longest, oldest friend / they could be like twinsies because they were born the same year.
Aw, that's so cute.
Yeah. And so we are going to be discussing Ub Iwerks. And
yes, indeed.
When I first heard that name, I was giggly. It is not a name that in America we are very familiar with. So,
yes.
Ubby.
Which is like, it's if you haven't guessed, it's very German, northwestern German. So, and also I love the last name Iwerks. I don't know why. It sounds either like it sounds to me like a Silicon Valley tech startup.
Honestly, so when the guys first got together, they were really young and they decided they were going to start their own company. And so they started their own company, but they were like debating what they were going to call it. And originally they were going to call it Disney Iwerks, but then that sounded like a glasses store. So then they changed it to Iwerks Disney.
Oh my God,
the company only survived for like a month.
So yeah, right.
It wasn't
I'm actually shocked at how short that was. Like, you can limp along for more than a month and like not do anything.
I mean, these guys were teenagers. They had at, you know, just a Kansas City studio, and they decided we're going to go ahead and we're going to get into just advertising, like animation for or not even animation. It was just advertising. So letter blocking and signage that they were going to get into.
Yeah.
And the desire to have that in Kansas City in like 1919 didn't really exist.
No.
Or it was already caught up by the other existing businesses. So they didn't really do that well.
Yeah. But yeah.
Anyways, so we're going to talk about UB, and we have a lot of information to go over.
Right.
Some people might be familiar with like the first little section, which is still quite a bit. But dude, this guy, like the more research
guy,
I did, he's ridiculous.
It's in my kind of overview of his life, I was just shocked at how far, you know what I mean? Like you would expect, like, oh, this is the end of his influence. Nope. It's here too. Like it just keeps following us wherever we go in the world that we like to cover on this podcast. Like, he just seems to have his hand in all of it in one way or another.
Yeah. And what they talked about in the beginning, on the research that I did, because there's actually not a lot of research places that you can get for UB. Like, you can find information on the Nine Old Men all over the place. But the link that I had sent you for my original contact was actually a TED Talk by his granddaughter, who then acknowledges that there was like no research done at all.
Right.
I had no acknowledgement of her grandfather, who actually is huge in this company and a huge influencer.
Right.
Like,
she was so
underplayed.
Yeah, she was interesting with the TED Talk because, you know, she basically ended up like stumbling into the story of her grandfather because she was just trying to figure out who he was and like ended up like getting support from Disney to like to do that research and interview those people. From Roy. Yeah. Which is fascinating that they were able, that she was able to do that. And she basically did all the first. So I think a lot of the research that exists on him from, you know, like a modern perspective is from her.
Yeah. There's one documentary, which I did watch.
Mm-hmm.
There is a book that came out that was done by his son, Don. And so I have that as well, as you know. And really, that's the only works that I was able to find on UB.
Wow.
iWorks. Okay. Sorry to say. There's going to be a lot of these puns. I can't help it. It just happens with his name.
Oh, yeah. It's just way too easy.
Okay. So long story, going to try and be as succinct as possible with this. I
believe in you.
On this note, I'm probably going to take lead.
Yeah.
It's easier to keep one of us on task, and then you can add in your quips as we go, because yeah.
I'm excited to learn too.
Okay, so buckle your seat belt, kids, here we go.
I'm in, Miss Frizzle, let's do this.
iWorks Disney, and that company went under within a month. Then they started working for another production house, and at that point in time decided to create Laugh-O-Grams. Laugh-O-Grams is a company that Walt was the head of, and Ub was the chief animator. They came up with the first motorized, actually Ub specifically came up with the first motorized animation camera so that it could only be run by one person instead of one person holding the films and another person doing the crank for the for the image capture.
So they could actually advance it without having to sit there and like have somebody up there. Cool.
Exactly. And they talk about how Walt is he's the mouth, and Ub is the technical person, and so you're going to find a lot of ideas, thoughts, all of that process coming from Walt, and then the how-tos, the breakdowns, the production, all of that coming from Ub. So they actually really worked well together, and they're the ones that originated the Alice's Wonderland, which is a little different than Alice in Wonderland, but it is one of the first crossover films of animation as well as live action. There was one that happened prior to this from a different production company where they had live action background and an animated character would interact or was basically drawn on top. This is the first time where they decided to reverse it. And so they had a live action character, Alice, go hang out in Wonderland. And so they really just goofed around with white screens to be able to just cut her out and then have her not touch the characters that were animated, but be able to interact. And honestly, they were so poor that Alice had to do all of her takes in one shot.
Right.
And no retakes. They couldn't afford it.
Oh, God.
After a while, the Alice in Wonderland or Alice's Wonderland animated shorts started to go under. And it was at that point in time that Walt moved to California under the suggestion of Roy.
Okay.
They decided that they're going to put together their last couple thousand dollars each, Roy, Disney, and Ub, and they convince Ub to come out for a final six episodes of Alice's Wonderland. They even convince the little actress, the four-year-old and her family, to move out to California as well.
Oh, geez.
Because at that point in time, they were able to secure a contract through Minx, which eventually turns into Universal Studios.
Got it. Okay.
So they have the six episodes left of Alice's Wonderland. And at that point in time, that's when they start creating more animation again, just solid animation. And that's where Oswald comes from. Now, the amazing thing about Oswald, the Lucky Rabbit, for people who aren't familiar with it, is that he was the first animated character that actually had like independent atomic body parts. So up until this point, almost all animation was very stick form and very rigid. Okay. And it was through Ub's invention of animation that you had curvy lines and like you'd have like body parts that were able to be used for different things and like pop off an arm or stretch a neck or things that we're familiar with now with cartoons. But a lot of the like even the jitteries and the wavy lines was a whole new aspect of animation.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Which created... they call that rubber hose animation.
Yeah. Ub was especially known for the gag of being able to like pick something up and have the arm twirl around the body like a helicopter and make it look fluid. And that was a, like a standard style for him. And in fact, almost everything that we equate to old style cartoons nowadays actually were either Ub or inspired by the movements Ub created through animation. So turning things into planes, taking thought bubbles and like making them real balloons and attaching them to, you know, this character or this or that. And it's just, it's crazy the amount of crazy stuff that he was able to come up with.
Yeah. Wow.
And because of that, Oswald became super popular.
Right.
At that time, though, their contract was coming up. Walt's contract with the Universal producers, Minx specifically, and and he goes to New York and finds out that not only are they not renewing the contract with what is now turned into Disney Brothers Cartoon Studios,
right,
but Minx had basically stolen every single animator that had worked on Oswald from underneath Walt's nose.
Oh, so they basically hired them out of Disney Brothers.
Oh, yeah. And the only one who turned them down was Ub.
Wow.
And then that's when, Walt got the news that, nope, the rabbit's ours. You can't have it. It's under our contract. Bye-bye. And so that's when the well-known train ride back where he first thought of another character. And so he's like, we need to have another character. We need to be able to do this. Roy, Ub, and Walt sit down and they like brainstorm all of these animals. They're like, cats? Nah, cats have already been done. Dogs? Nah. You know, they go through all of these animals and eventually a mouse pops up. So then Ub is like, okay, I can work with this. And so like that first night alone, I think he made like 300 sketches or something like that.
Whoa.
Just to solidify the image of the three circle mouse that we're familiar with.
Yeah.
And then they're like, yes, let's do this. Go for it. Go on. You got this. And they're like doing all this pep talk to Ub. And Ub's like, okay, I'm going to do this. And they're keeping this all on the down low too, because they don't want anybody to know that they came up with a new character and a new concept. And they're just going to create the first cartoon.
Okay.
And so Ub single-handedly wrote or drew 700 drawings a day was able to get plain crazy done within a matter of like weeks. The entire animated short of plain crazy was illustrated by Ub Iwerks.
Just a single animator for an entire short film. Like, that's crazy. That's like, it's just unheard of.
Seriously. Like, and the only people that they had in the company at that time were Walt and Lillian, Roy and his wife, who is also in the, you know, ink and paint area.
Yeah.
Not department yet. That's way in the future. And then Ub.
Yeah.
And so it's just like the five of them just sitting there like trying to make this all work. And so like I said, Walt came up with script, personality. They also attribute him to the soul. He's basically the mouth of the company. Charismatic, very, very able to get people on board and to encourage people and excite people. And like I said, Ub did all the background stuff. Images, technical layout, processes, all of that stuff for the first like huge chunk of Mickey's life.
Wow. It kind of reminds me of like the Disney Iwerks dynamic kind of reminds me of like the Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak dynamic.
Mm-hmm. And again,
where
there's only one name that's really familiar.
Exactly.
Which is unfortunate. Super unfortunate, because as you're going to see, and we keep going, there's so much more that Ub's contributed. Okay, so we get to Steamboat Willie. Okay. As we're all familiar with, Steamboat Willie is the first animation that actually was able to sync to sound. And it was because Ub put in beat marks on the film that the conductor was able to follow and match. So originally, Disney had had a hard time getting the conductor because they had gotten this whole orchestra together to be able to synchronize it. And they weren't able to follow along because they didn't know when things were coming up. And so Ub intentionally put beat marks on there so that way you could keep up with it and understand the layout of the music and timing and pacing and all of that.
That's really cool. I mean, that's like he basically just built a metronome into the celluloid. Like that's super cool.
Mm-hmm. And then they decided, okay, so we can put music to an animation. What if we made an animation to music? And the first time that they did that was actually the skeleton dance. We're familiar with things like Fantasia, where they take these huge pieces of classical music and illustrate to them, but this is well before that. And so there was a song that came out or that was composed, and Ub got really inspired by it and was like, I'm gonna do all these dancing skeletons, which is honestly one of my favorite things to watch in Halloween. But awesome. He's like having like the bones fall off and they're becoming musical instruments and they're hopping around and doing a whole bunch of things that obviously regular bodies can't do.
But
it was such a celebration of what he could do. And then after that, Walt became a little bit more strict on timing and started to take away some of the control that Ub had in these early animations as far as like timing and what he wanted to happen and when. And so Ub didn't like that. Ub didn't like that Walt was basically boxing him and taking away his creative freedom and saying that you have to have this whole thing done in this many frames or this whole thing done in this many seconds.
Right.
So he just got up and left. Like Walt was off advertising for the skeleton dance and Ub goes to Roy, "I quit." And Roy has to send a telegram to Walt to be like, "We just lost Ub.
You lost the dude. You lost the guy who's making the sausage.
What are we going to do? We just lost Ub."
Oh, my God.
So that was kind of a blow. I mean, at that point in time, they already had a couple other people working in animation, and they were, you know, through the success of Steamboat Willie and other productions, Silly Symphonies, that sort of thing. They had a staff that they were able to pretty much cover at that point in time as...
Sure.
Ub decides to create his own studio. And in fact, he was approached by the company that initiated the sound processing for Steamboat Willie.
Oh, okay.
To follow Ub.
Okay.
Even though they had originally been working with
Disney studio.
The Disney studios.
Right.
They're like, we're going to follow Ub because we know this guy is
and
awesome.
We know what he's capable of. Yeah. Exactly.
And cool. Ub starts up a studio and it's becoming, you know, the Depression, Prohibition, all of that craziness that happened around that time. And honestly, it didn't really affect them at all. They were just making so much money with animations and they were hiring, and he had so many people, big names, that came to work underneath him and that went on to do better things. So like the creator of Bugs Bunny worked for him. The creator of Betty Boop worked for him. The creator, like, it's so many big,
huge list.
Yeah. And they just worked under Ub Iwerks in Iwerks Studios. at that point in time, he decided he needed his own character, his own animal character.
Yeah.
And created Flip the Frog.
Classic.
So the thing about Ub's animation style too is it is rather risque. There are times where it is raunchy. They have no problem with like Flip being a peeping Tom through a window or a girl's skirt being blown up or like there are some things that as we see it now, though I don't think they realized it back then, were racist. So they had like animated characters of, you know, Asian countries or India or that sort of thing that they, made fun of and played up the, you know, those sorts of things.
Their ethnicity, right.
And it started getting really, really deep and really dark.
Yikes.
Yeah. So the one thing that I'm going to bring up is they did create one of the most famous forms of animation techniques through UBS Studio that Waltz attributed for. And it's the multiplane camera.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. So Comic Color cartoons was something that UBS decided he was going to get into that's kind of like Silly Symphonies.
Okay.
But it's the first time where they had like a multiplane camera. But unlike Walt or the Disney multiplane camera, where it's a story, mm-hmm. you know, with different heights, UBS was originally, I think it was horizontal. And so they had the cranks and everything. And you could like stand and look down the camera instead of having to climb this tower and then look.
Got it. So they actually, I could see why the floor is better for positioning things, but I could see the horizontal one being really convenient for a lot of stuff too.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh. And like he created that in 1933.
Dang.
So there is a Comic Color cartoon, which I think is the ideal example of like UB at his creative freedom worst.
Oh boy.
Best.
Please do tell.
I mean, I enjoyed it because I'm twisted, but sure. it's basically called Balloon City.
Okay.
And so there's just a whole city of all these different little balloons, and the big boogeyman is the Pincushion Man. And mm-hmm. they're like, the Pincushion Man doesn't exist. And then all of a sudden he pops up and he's like murdering people left and right. And they're like little balloons, so they're popping. I mean, think about it, kind of like Bing Bong in Inside Out and Cloud Too City soon. People. I
mean, too soon.
Kind of. So, I mean, you're not seeing blood spatter and everything, but like he's flat out like torturing and murdering people, like popping arms and then popping a head and all of this. And it's just crazy. And then that's when the film censorship like organization came into play and was like, no, you can't have sexual connotations to animation. You can't have racist connotations to animation. You can't have murder and those sorts of things represented in animation. I think that came out in like 1933 as well. So like Balloon City is one of the last things that he worked on. But it basically took away everything that he'd been doing, and nobody was interested in his animation anymore. So his studio went under.
Ugh.
At that time, take a breath. Someone from Disney Animation finds out that UB is recently free.
Unemployed. Free, yeah.
We're going to say. And is like, you know, Walt, what do you think about if we get him back on the team? And Walt's like, well, we can ask him. And they do. And he says, I'll come back. I have no animosity towards you guys, but I refuse to be in animation again. I'm not going to draw.
Okay.
So at that point in time, he puts down his pencil and gets behind the camera and starts coming up with everything else that most people aren't familiar with, because they might know UB as far as what he's produced, things that he's done.
Yeah,
you know, he made such big advances into the animation world that he took it from the little nothing shorts ahead of a feature film into being what people come to see. And then there's a feature film, supposedly. They were more concerned about like the Mickey shorts and that sort of thing. He created so much. But at that point in time, that's where a lot of people's knowledge of UB stops.
So
he comes back and he's part of the Walt Disney Company. And the first thing that he does is UB creates an optical printer. So at this point in time, this is when they're doing, he comes back during the war films that are being done, and he is trying to take live action actors, as well as locations. He had to bring back some of the techniques that he had been using for Alice's Wonderland, where it was the white screen.
Yeah, it's and they so call that a luminance key, where they just blank out everything. They can use that like a true color of like one pure color can be used to isolate a subject.
But they figured out how to do that for live action to live action. So this was the time where they were able to have like some actors in a boat and then be able to have like the river scene behind them from France without having to spend the money to ship everybody off to France. To be able to do this. A lot of those techniques became what we know as blue screen, green screen, what we're familiar with now. He's the one who created the optical printer.
Wow. They still use that. They use that up until like the late 90s. Like that's like that technology was very much relevant. In fact, I think they still use some of that tech for like making like 35 millimeter prints today. Like that, like the thing that'll print stuff on there. Like they've actually like they still use that kind of technology.
Speaking of 35 millimeter prints, he also figured out a way to eliminate scratches from the film through a liquid immersion, because at that point in time, almost anything that had been filmed, if light hit it just wrong, there might be a little crease on the film. But once you blow that up to theater sizes, it's huge. And so he came up with a process of being able to take the printed film, and it went into this liquid immersion bath before it was re-rolled up, and through that re-rolling, it came out of the bath, and the chemicals would dry off, but it basically sealed the film so you could put it in a container and you wouldn't have to worry about it scratching.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's behind the scenes stuff, but this is stuff that we don't even think of, that he came up with, techniques, to fix it so that way it wasn't an issue in the future. Another one that he came up with was souvenir cells for collections. You know how you might have like a still image of this film or that film? He figured out a way to take a photo of the finished film that had been that had been recorded from the multiplane camera, so that way you could get like a souvenir film from Lady and the Tramp.
Oh,
a souvenir cell.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Like just one singular frame.
Yeah. So he was able to, he used a Kodak Technichrome. I don't quote me on that, but I know he used a Kodak product to be able to capture
that. Kodachrome?
That sounds right.
Okay.
To be able to capture all of these cells to make souvenirs, to then have Walt be able to give away, advertise, give to investors who are funding the animation movies that are coming out. And it was a huge, you know, addition to the souvenir world at that point in time, because nobody had little shots of, you know, movies.
That would be, that would have been just unbelievably cool. Wow. Yeah.
Another innovation. He came up with large matte paintings. Okay. Basically sets, scenes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Instead of having to go to location, build a huge set with hundreds of, you know, extras for cast.
Yeah.
He was one of the ones that came up with using a large matte painting.
Yeah.
To, you know, show off where they're supposed to be. A good visual of that is Mary Poppins. So the floating in that she does in the title sequence.
Yeah.
That is a huge matte photo.
Yeah.
Or image that they took video of and then placed her on top of as she was able to float in. And, you know, set painting has become a huge thing since then.
Oh,
but until then, everybody was going on location. And yeah, it took a long time and it took a lot of money for them to make those large matte paintings. But they saved a lot in flights, in hotels, in, you know, casting, in all of that stuff.
Yeah, and you also get a lot of control. The other thing is shooting on location from a production standpoint can be a nightmare. Like, you have to control the location, you have to do all that stuff. When you're shooting with a large matte painting, you're usually in your own soundstage or rented soundstage, and you have complete control of the space, which is really, really nice for production teams.
So yet again, another thing that is 100% behind the scenes, but it's become the normal.
Yeah.
For any sort of filming.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Another thing that I thought was really interesting that I never would have like guessed who or what was when they were creating the Mickey Mouse Club and they had multiple cameras going with multiple different angles. He was the one who figured out how to do the electronic editing to match up the three editing terminals to be able to stop at the same time. So then they could change the film. Now that with us, that's easy just to press a button now on our editing systems and to have everything stop at once.
Yep.
Instead of having like three separate people coordinating and being like, one, two, three, stop. He was able to do the, you know, mechanics to make it electronic. So that way, if he pressed stop, all three machines would stop at once.
Would stop. Yeah.
I know that sounds.
And he can make cuts easy. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds so minuscule, but it was a huge thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's like multi-camera editing is still like one of the biggest like things with editing that can be really crazy. And that is like the first step is like being able to make sure that you can maintain sync on all those cameras when you're stopping and starting and cutting. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I did not know that he was involved with that at all.
Yeah. And it started because of the Mickey Mouse Club.
Wow.
The next couple you should be familiar with.
I am familiar with.
The very next one.
Yes, I am familiar with. When we talked about this a little bit when we talked about 101 Dalmatians, but the Xerox method for cell animation allowed for the animators themselves to be able to do their it's explaining all this, but being able to like use their own work to duplicate for doing paints and actual frames that would end up in the shot, which created a very different look. And it was brand new for that movie. It was like, you know, was that like 63?
It saved money. It saved time. It saved labor. Materials. I mean, everything to be able to take an image and put it in a copy machine, essentially, and be able to get an image back.
Have a new one.
I mean, that really streamlined the animation process some more.
Yeah.
So the next one, Walt decides that he wants to have a traveling museum.
Because why not? Classic Walt.
To basically kind of advertise for Sleeping Beauty. I mean, it had already been out a little bit, but it was hugely popular and it was beautiful. And Walt wanted to have animation going that was continuous without playing the whole movie. And at that point in time, you know, you'd play through a reel. And then you'd have to rewind the reel, and then you'd have to restart the reel. And so Uv was able to come up with an animation or a looped animation projection machine.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So that way it only played the same loop, but it continued until you turned it off. So then we had to stop, rewind, press play again, essentially.
Yeah, like an endless loop film.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Another thing that he came up with were, this is where we're getting into him going to work for WED unofficially.
Okay.
So we're kind of leaving the theater version of UB behind and we're moving into the WED version of UB.
WED version, yeah.
And so when they were coming up with Disneyland and specifically new attractions, and they would make all of these tiny models, what he would do is he figured out how to make a camera small enough and have it on like a little slide so you could actually see the model as if you were in the ride.
Right. Oh, cool.
Which, again, sounds like so normal and expected, but until he came up with it, they were just looking at the model and being like, well, it looks good from here. But once you're able to like shrink yourself down and get into it, and see all the little details, see angles. Is this going to work? Is that going to work? I mean,
right. Perspective. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perspective is everything.
In the attractions for like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the Sleeping Beauty Castle walkthrough, and a whole bunch of other ones, Ub was the one who created the visual effects of like dry water or like light waves to make it look like water through two rotating glass discs or like fire or that sort of thing. I know that there are the, you know, torches in Pirates of the Caribbean that are flickering, and he's the one who came up with that. Yeah. And, you know, all of those lighting effects, he's the one who came up with the way to impersonate water or fire. Or, you know, those other elemental actions that nobody had been able to duplicate until him.
Yeah.
He also,
that's cool.
And this is a huge one for people who are at the parks. He came up with the Circa camera for 360 filming.
Yes.
For circle vision filming. So that is a technique that started in Disneyland and has been used all over Disney properties, has been brought to World's Fairs, has been brought to many other things. I mean, planetariums right now use it, and other big screen sort of projection shows.
I mean, it's very common in like museum installations and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was the first one to figure out, like, let's put an odd number of cameras facing out and let's just drive or fly and show everybody what it's like to, what was it? You know, Across America was one of them. You know, Oh Canada's another one.
I was about to say, Oh Canada, like, always stands out to me.
I love Oh Canada. It's horrible. Dang you, Martin Short. I love it.
I know. Okay. It's terrible, and it's my favorite.
But, you know, circle vision is a huge thing. And he's the one who came up with the technique of being able to use an odd number of cameras to be able to then, you know, not just film, but project around you, that created a continuous loop. So you could literally be standing in the middle and turn around and see a 360 view of wherever the video is from, wherever the film's going to be from.
Right.
And that was a huge innovation that Ub came up with. A couple last ones. I'll just say them real quick. Haunted Mansion. He's the one who came up with the projection scaping for the singing busts and Madame Leota's face. Working with the textured faces, but being able to get them to sing and interact. It was, you know, pretty innovative at that time.
Early projection mapping, that's still exciting.
Now we have projection mapping on top of castles and trees and anything else,
whatever.
As well as he assisted with the light activated cam machines for Abraham Lincoln for the 1964 World's Fair, as well as other animatronics. So like It's a Small World and a lot of the initial animatronic sort of activation tech.
Yeah.
He died in 1971, so 5 years after Walt, due to a heart attack. And then he was inducted as a Disney legend in 1989 with the Nine Old Men.
Wow.
And that is a lot about Ub, but that's barely scraping the surface, as you know. Surface. At this point, I was just like, okay, bullet point.
Yeah. I didn't realize how one person, that there was one person that had so much attributed to him, like, in just,
and nobody knows about him. Like, unless you are a diehard Disney nerd or an animation nerd.
Right.
But then even with the animation nerd, you'd only, like, it would stop.
Mm-hmm. Once he stopped doing animation stuff, then like you wouldn't have noticed anymore. But his legacy just goes on for so long.
His son started working for the Disney company and picked up in his father's shoes. Like, they worked together on a lot of the web products or projects. His granddaughter is in filming and directing, and like it's become a whole like family legacy.
Yeah.
The stuff that Ub started with.
Wow.
And nobody knows who he is.
That's so crazy. Yeah. Just amazing. Well, and it's like, we always knew, even from fairly early on, we were kind of like just talking about Imagineers and the Nine Old Men and all that stuff. He was always there, and he was always like present and part of it. But like, I didn't really realize like that depth. It's just crazy.
Yeah. And I'm glad we got to do this little bit of a spotlight. I feel like he needs a lot more acknowledgement for the amount of work that he has not just contributed to the Walt Disney Company, but to film in general.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just from the stuff that you were going through, this was stuff that applied to me throughout like film school. Like this was all, and I had no idea that he had anything to do with that. Like I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. And I mean, he did win like tons of awards for this. Like I remember reading at one point in time that they had made up a technical award just to give him an Oscar because of the amount of stuff that he came out with that year. They're like, oh yeah, by the way, I know this isn't a category, but there's only one person anyways. So here you go, Ub. Jeez. This is awesome. Thanks for doing all this, guys.
I think that became an award that they established after that, because now like software and hardware for the film industry, now those people get awards for that now, but that was never a thing before. That's just fascinating.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if you are interested in Ub's work, I cannot recommend highly enough the book. It's Walt Disney's Ultimate Inventor, the Genius of Ub Iwerks. I'm going to have the image. I'm going to hold it up real quick.
Yay.
And it is amazing. Like, the animation part is barely the first quarter of the book. And the rest of it is him after he puts down the pencil.
Wow.
I mean, there's so much stuff to cover. I didn't even cover everything. And then there is The Hand Behind the Mouse, which is the documentary that you can watch. And that one was done by his granddaughter. There's the TED Talk. And really, that's all I was able to find. So I would encourage you to spread the story of Ub, because he needs a lot more recognition than he's getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, on that note, this has been a long one. Thank you so much for sticking around with us.
Right.
This has been WD Carousel of Podcast. My name's Crystal.
And I'm Ian.
And we hope you have a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Bye, everybody.